Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. Another week, another game. Mayo are rolling again. The qualifiers do tend to be the place where Mayo get into gear over the last 6 or 7 years, and it has happened again. We thought it was a banana skin, but Mayo escaped Monaghan with the win. Kildare in Croke Park at the weekend. So much to talk about. Previewing that game, looking back at the weekend's game, talking about the venue, lots of other things as well. We got some great guests on, but before we get to them, I mentioned, for as usual, for the Oxford Arms, who are our main sponsors, a shout out for Nigel Reed Printing and Signs, who backed this podcast as well. And if you're not already a member of our Patreon site and you'd like to get lots more bonus pods, log on to patreon.com/Mayo Podcast. Here's some of the names that were on in the last week: Keith Duggan, Jim McGuinness, Paul Early, John Casey. That's just a start. We've also got our Final Whistle podcast this year for every minor, under 20 and senior game. Straight after the game, we have an instant podcast for you. And for the minors, their Connacht final triumph this week. What a brilliant win that was. For all the coverage on that, Nigel Reap and Sean Dean, the manager, on with Mike Finnerty. That's on the Patreon page as well. But we have more business ahead of us. It's Mayo senior team. It's the All-Ireland last 12 at this stage. And on the show, back again for a little bit more, Michael Foley of the Sunday Times. How are you?
Good, Rob. How are you, bye?
Really, really good. How's all down in Cork?
Sure, we're struggling away. Can't wait. We're in, you know, we're in the top 12 as well, you know.
Oh, cheers. Yeah,
no one noticed that happening. Hey, but here we are.
Got past Loud and you're still alive. Yeah, fair enough. Hey, look, I mean, those first 50 minutes against Kerry had us all.
Yeah, you're fine. Don't start being patronizing. You know, it's a bit early in the day for that. You can get onto that later on in your clubhouse section. You can get
onto that. yeah, definitely. We'll save that for the clubhouse section of the podcast. I'm delighted to say, also on the podcast, joining us, I think for the first time for quite a while anyways, we had him way back when. Dole Vaughan, how are you?
How are things, Rob? Thanks for having me on. Great to be here.
It's good to have you on. How are things? How are you enjoying? Are you keeping yourself fit? I know you've been playing a bit of sport in the background. I know this because my own rugby club are part of that story.
That's for sure. Yeah, I the extra weight is a rugby muscle and conditioning, so I'm just cutting that. There's a reason the Zoom call is from my head up, but I know. Yeah, that was an interesting one. All right, yeah, I retired because the body was in bits, and I was asked to go back to the rugby. I hadn't played in 15 years, but I was going to ask before Christmas, and I was like, oh, I can't, my body's in bits. And then I was thinking about it over Christmas, and I was like, Jesus, I wonder would it be any good, and really, really wanted to actually go back. And then so that was an interesting conversation with the wife. I'm going back playing rugby. But to be fair, she let me at it.
We'll talk a bit more about that in the clubhouse section of the podcast, because it's an interesting arc that you've gone on. Rugby was something you played in the early days as well, and you originally come from a town in Cork that loved their rugby as well, down in Kenturk. So lots more of that later. But anyways, we've got Mayo football to talk about. Overall, you obviously took in the game, Kildare to come. Maybe we'll start with that, Donny. What do you reckon about that draw? How do you think Mayo are fixed for the weekend?
I think good. I think look, before you kind of look forward, you nearly have to look back and kind of the mood around the place. And I suppose here in the shop now, you can take it all in. You can read a bit more than you were when you're playing, chatting to people. Like, there was obviously a lot of negativity around after the Galway game. And I suppose there is any time you lose. And sometimes it's even whether you lose by 10 or you lose by 1. If you fall the wrong side of a defeat, everything else is looked at differently. Like the Galway game, in my opinion, Mayo did not play anywhere near the best either. Galway came down to the three long range frees that Galway hit. Mayo missed theirs. All of a sudden, in fairness, Kenny McDade went down the right wing and hit a really good score. And next thing, Mayo were chasing the game, decided only playing in the last 5 or 6 minutes. But there was a lot of kind of negativity around. But when we had lost kind of championship games previously, narrow margins to Galway, there's like a big long break. You're like, you spend 6 weeks nearly in training. Looking back, it's the last game that everyone's talked about. Do you know, if you had a game the following week, you just move on. But what you often find is if you can get over that first game, there is massive momentum. Now, the two games, I think when I was involved in the qualifiers, that we had big long breaks after a Connacht Championship defeat was Fermanagh and Derry. And I think if you look at both of them performances, like we got out of them by the skin of our teeth. The Derry game, we hit the post maybe 20 times. It was around the time that David Gavin actually had passed away tragically out in Canada, and a lot of our players kind of got the news before the game, and it just had one of them really eerie feelings that, and I think he was looking down on us in the end. We got over the line that day, and Lofty came on off and think hit off the bench and hit 1-1 in extra time. James Keith missed a point late on actually to win that game, and the Fermanagh one was simple as well. I remember that. But you're just coming off negativity. You're not sure where you are yourself. You know potentially you're maybe a better team, but the qualifier games take on lives of their own. So me personally, for this weekend, I was just saying win any way you can. I know it's nice to find a bit of form, but if you can win and just build the next game, you're kind of on a roll. You're on momentum. So I was delighted to see Mayo win by a couple of points, to be honest.
Mick, just before, we'll go into the Monaghan game in a bit of detail in a while, but just off the top, since Tony's directing me towards this, a lot of talk in the lead into this game about the fact that Mayo were primed for an upset, Monaghan were set, anything could happen. Did you buy into that? Did Mayo surprise you in any way, the fact that they advanced?
Not particularly, no. I didn't buy into the idea that they were going to lose, if that's what, you know,
yeah.
First up. I didn't. I thought home advantage, number one. I mean, as Donny says, like when you have a layoff like that, and everybody, including players, everybody wants to see, well, how are we going to be, you know? Because you don't really know until the game starts and it evolves and things go wrong or things go right or whatever. How are we going to react when things go right, you know? And the last day, I thought, like, for particularly in the first half, for about 20 odd minutes, Mayo were terrific. You know, they really, really were. Like it was kind of throwback stuff to Mayo in full flight, and you know, great running game was going terrifically well. There was guys off the shoulder. There was great energy about them. I thought some of the newer players like Aidan Orm and a couple of others really were very, very good. And I thought Oisin Mullen was going great. Everything was going well. I mean, in the first 20 odd minutes, the only fly in the ointment you could nearly say was first 20 minutes was the first couple of minutes, really. It was Gary Moan was getting a bit of change up front. But, I mean, they sorted that out and everything looked good. You know, I thought they looked fine. It was, you know, with Monaghan, I think there's definitely, again, you're talking about a team with very finite resources, you know, and who've done extremely well to keep themselves at a certain level with a very limited squad. And there's a little bit of change coming there. You know, Conor McManus was taken off before the end of the game. He just wasn't where Conor McManus would have been, and losing him for the black card, obviously, in the first half was in the heel of the hunt when you did the sums. That was the crucial time. You know, Monaghan were really chasing that. He was 1-3. Mayo scored without reply or something like that. They were chasing that all day. And they just couldn't get back. They just didn't have they had a bit of quality off the bench. Shane Carey came off the bench, did well for Monaghan, but you know, I thought the guys that Mayo were able to bring off the bench again, even withstanding the fact that there was a lot of, you know, conversation about, well, who's going to be fit, where is the Mayo injury profile? They still had enough off the bench to get it done. But like Donny says, like in a match like that, you just want to win the bloody thing. You know, at this stage, you just want to get the show back on the road. Monaghan was a good, like drawing Monaghan, it wasn't like you were drawing a handy, you know, what looks handy on paper, you know what I mean? They were a legit Division One team, and beating them it's a feather in the cap, and you move on. So like it probably had everything in it. It was good stuff in it, but plenty, I thought, in the end of the day for Mayo to work on as well, you know.
Tony, like just sticking on the game then, because look, I know there's lots of stuff. We'll get into the Kildare game and we'll get into the venue as well, which is a big story this week. But I want to just kind of move or bring this along a little bit. Like, you know, what went wrong against Galway, what went right against Monaghan is one question. But another question is, like, did you see some changes in the way Mayo were playing the last day? Did you see some evidence of what might have been happening on the training field since Galway, what Mayo might have learnt in the last 6 weeks?
I suppose, well, to throw it out there first, one thing, I wasn't actually in McHale Park, but I was at home minding the young fella, so I saw it from the telly perspective, which is only gives you obviously a certain perspective. You can't see the shape and stuff off the ball, but it did appear that Mayo seemed to have a lot more structure when they did get turned over. We just didn't seem as open at the back. What it looked like to me was that Aidan seemed to be kind of holding a good bit more. with, I know when we were playing back in our day, sometimes you'd have, if you had two on two inside, but it was hard for me to see, you'd be holding maybe a plus one or two, but it just seemed that on the counter attack, we just weren't as susceptible, susceptible to counter attacks, in fairness. That would be one change. I'd say our accuracy and stuff and the way we held the ball was a bit better as well. Skills and stuff, passes were in the right thing, done with the right hand. What is interesting for me, and it's actually playing at home is an advantage and the crowd gets behind you, but sometimes it actually can be a little bit of a disadvantage as well, where I think we were working the ball from left to right a few times. And, you know, the crowd actually sometimes gets frustrated. I often feel that, as with the public in general, we like Mayo, we really like fast football end to end, but sometimes, and we were known for a running game, but sometimes the running game can be dangerous as well if you commit everyone forward and you get hit on the counter. Sometimes you just have to go through it. You have to work the phases, work the score. There was one, I think it's half to the first half, a brilliant score. I think we kept the ball for 2 or 3 minutes and got a score at the end of it. But I thought Mayo's, so their ball retention and our structure at the back was a definite improvement on Galway.
It's a funny thing, Donny, you watch soccer as well. Like in the context of soccer, if a team keeps the ball for 40 passes and scores a goal, it's celebrated as a glorious goal. But in football, it's nearly celebrated as relief, or at least you've scored after all that is nearly the tone of the atmosphere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Will we get used to that in Mayo, do you think? Because like we nearly should be at this stage, shouldn't we?
It is, yeah. But like I was at the Dublin game last year up there, and what seemed to ignite the crowd, the semi-final or semi-final, we had an attack. We got hit on a counter. It was poor defending. There was like literally, I think if the Mayo player didn't intercept it, we were in for a goal. Dublin were in for a goal. We get this interception down the field, get this counter attack, and the crowd went absolutely crazy. And anyone that was at that game, and it was one of my first as a supporter, you could feel the energy start to build. But like I was kind of going, normally that comes from like a score or a block. This came from like, it was actually, that's from bad play. I was like, this is madness. Like that was like nearly a goal. We're down the field. I think we did score. And next thing was like, yes, we're back. And I think it was that incident that actually kicked fired the energy that Mayo played with. But like all of a sudden, Dublin could feel it. We could feel it. Jesus, there was, so it's weird, but that was an end-to-end stuff. But like as a player and stuff, you, if you're looking back at that in the Co Life Day analysis, you were actually saying, hang on, that was a bad decision there. That was, we got that intercept, but like, did we need to really do that? Do you know?
Like it's one of those, I think with Gaelic football, it's about chaos.
People
crave chaos.
Yeah.
And the rules, in my opinion, anyway, the rules should be shaped to reward risk and to accommodate chaos. And what I mean by that is, I mean, stuff like people complain about the forward mark. I'm no fan of the forward mark, but I can see the idea of trying to get guys to kick the ball longer. Because if you kick the ball, you are creating risk. And if you can reward the risk, well, then maybe you can inculcate it into the game and into players to take a chance. You know what I mean? So like the idea, Rob making the point there, Rob, you were making the point just about soccer playing back. Soccer is far more, it's one of the things that differentiates it. And it's one of the aspects of the personality of Gaelic football is that there is an element of chaos in it, right? And that, you know, you're quite right. I mean, two or three minutes of possession football is grand if it goes over the bar and everybody will turn to each other and go, geez, that was well done now, wasn't it? That was well done. If you feckin' kick it wide, we thought, the game's gone to pot.
Yeah.
So like that, but that'll tell you, that to me, that tells you about the conflict between the natural personality of the game and how the game is being asked now to evolve in a more modern, analytical, quantitative way. That you're sort of creating a structure within a sport that wasn't necessarily designed for the sport, for that kind of structure. And that brings me around to another point, just when you were talking there about Mayo's style and so on and so forth and how it's, you know, the possession game. I think every county, every team has a particular identity to their play. And I think you have to be very, very, a house divided will not stand. So, and the same way a team compromised in its style of play will not stand. And you see it a lot. Counties that really, really change their approach from what they're comfortable with, what they've been reared on, they generally doesn't go well. Whereas if you can find that mix, and you're right, like the structured thing on Saturday was very evident. And I think with Mayo, with the running game, oftentimes you'd be watching Mayo. And funny enough, it was actually, I'll never forget. It was Paul Galvin pointed it out, actually, from Kerry. He used to do a piece for us, but he's just always driving mad watching Mayo sometimes. And you'd see lads, you'd see backs way ahead of forwards, right? And he's always driving mad that this is grand, this is great. And there were some great backs in the world and yourself, like for getting scores from play. But generally speaking, you'd like to have a forward in possession 20 yards from goal taking a shot that you want to go over the bar. Whereas if you have that harum scarum lack of structure, and I mean harum scarum, I don't mean it in a kind of mad way, but like if everybody is far and we're getting, who's the free shooter? Someone with number fucking four in their back, like 20 yards from goal. Oh, Jesus, it doesn't work. It doesn't always, and it particularly doesn't work in the clutch moments. You want your best striker, shooter on the ball in the clutch moments. So if you create better structure around your team, well, then you probably have a better chance of that happening, I think. You create more space for yourself up front.
Yeah.
If that makes, I don't know if that makes
sense. No, I 100% agree. And the whole identity, that was kind of a way we played for years. Like, and I won't say, sometimes what made us so good was that we were so unpredictable. And I'm not saying we didn't know what we were doing ourselves, but we could literally do anything.
Oh, yeah.
And, but it was, players ended up in different positions, mismatches. All of a sudden, the advantage of having a back in the forwards is that you usually have a forward marking him, you know, so then he can't defend. And then you get mismatches and all that. But like, it was an interesting point that you mentioned there about the rules. The game wasn't designed for a lot of the structure, and like teams are analysing to death now and they're realising, hang on, like a big one that's driving me mad now since I retired and I've been watching more football is, and we used to do this a lot, we're trained, it is the tactical foul. So especially on a counter-attack. So like everyone really likes watching Mayo and counter-attacking teams going. But like when we turn someone over, bang, we want to counter-attack. The crowd gets up, we're ready to go. And it's not the pull down or the black card. It's literally just a cynical foul. Hold your man up, get the right side of the ball. Like if you stop it for 5 seconds, everyone's now behind the ball. So, and people are complaining, we'll say with Mayo didn't structure game. But the rules aren't helping it. Like a thing I would suggest, and you might say it's madness, and I'm probably suggesting it now that I'm not playing anymore, is like if there was that type of foul, a foul on a counter-attack, it should be like a black card or a 14-yard free. The punishment doesn't fit the crime. Because what you're ultimately trying to do there really is, on a counter-attack, you're really afraid of a goal, probably number one. Do not concede a goal, and you're very vulnerable on a counter-attack. So actually a 14-yard free as a point might be actually still worth doing it. But the big one is they'd probably have a way better chance of getting a point off that. So again, a black card, if you lose a man for 10 minutes, you said Monaghan lost Conor McManus, they conceded 1-3. If you're conceding 3 to 4 points in that 10-minute window, that a player is gone. But I do think the GAA need to look at some of the rules in the same way that rugby does. But then like one issue with tweaking the rules, like an interesting one in the rugby was the jackler who wins the ball was rewarded more than the team in possession. And what the offspring of that then was that people just kept kicking the ball, and we got a game like the line series where no one would pass the ball. Everyone just kept kicking it. So, you know, there will be tweaks, but I do think if they could reward the counter-attacking team or the team that wants to, and I suppose the other one, what I'm talking about rules is like the advantage rule is like they kind of have it a bit, but they could make it way better.
They haven't quite got it yet, haven't they not?
No, like a simple thing would be a fella again tries to stop someone running through. What you see again, and I kind of bring it back to rugby, not that it's the perfect game, but when someone has an advantage, you will try a crossfield kick, you'll try a mad drop kick, you'll try a crazy pass. If the advantage rule in GAA was a little bit longer, what you would get is when you're working that ball around the D now, it would make sense to try an outside of the right. You'd tend to see better scores. But what that's doing again, and I think it's back to your point, Michael, is that it's rewarding the team who wants to play, who wants to attack, you know. But it's, look.
It's funny you should mention the cynical attempt to slow down a counter-attack. Like, you know, it's funny, things never change. I remember 20 years ago when Armagh winning All-Irelands, there was fierce chat about the half tackle, the half foul. Armagh used to have a way of sort of just blocking a lad coming out from defence, and it was so obvious what they were doing. You know, I mean, it wasn't, counter-attacking wasn't as pronounced that time, But that's what they were. We knew that's what they were. Just they were killing the game so they could get back into this position. And I think I remember there was a version of what you were saying there about the 14 yard. I think myself and Kieran Shannon came up. I think it was the black ball. You call it the black ball foul. So rather than a black card, it'd be a black ball. So you bring the ball up to the 20 meter line or whatever, you know, something like that. But I mean, it's all about, as you say, it's like any sport should be about rewarding the guy who wants to take a chance or wants to try something. And I think Gaelic football is, you know, you see the reaction to the Donegal Derry Ulster final the other week. I don't think that game was representative at all of the game. I think that was just a set of circumstances and the pair of teams that were just, they were both in a situation where they just could not lose. But it did magnify the importance of possession and the complete absence of turnovers in the game. He kind of reminded you, yeah, there's a deal of work to be done here, just around rewarding more, letting the ball go. Let the ball go and let lads go. Let them have a crack.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
Tony, just on all of this, right? And switching it to James Horan a bit. Have you seen Mayo's play evolve from, let's say, James Horan 1.0 to 2.0, if you like, from the team that you were involved in? Do you see some changes in the way Mayo are playing, or do you still think that the core principles are the same?
No, they've definitely changed. I think we had a very young team as well. Where you'd really see a change and you nearly forgot yourself, even though when you're involved in it, is when we played Kerry in 2017 in the semi-final. I'd never watched back the 2014 game in Limerick, the replay. Never watched that game back. I'd obviously watched the first game because we were playing in between. And there was about actually three or four guys on the team who didn't watch it. So I watched it the week before that game. A bit of motivation as well. But what was funny, nearly what I got out of it more than motivation was like, I know we were under Stephen Rocher that time. It was like, hang on a second here. Jeez, I'm not saying we were brutal back then, but we were just all out attack, up and down. I think the bamboo chase, we used to call it, up and down, up and up, up and down craziness. And usually we just outran teams. But like in 2018, we'd evolved so much. Again, probably not known as a possession team, but we were just able to keep it a little bit longer than just like 100 miles an hour down the field. So you then look at, I suppose, Mayo the last day, like, you know, able to play that possession game, which again is boring, but like there was a time where that just was a thing we didn't even consider. We didn't do it really, you know. So I think he's definitely changed from that point of view, tweaked it. I think James's biggest philosophy in the press hasn't really changed. It's maybe we're pressing a little bit further. We're getting outside the 45 and pressing from there. Once upon a time, it was nearly straight away. I think Man City press, they press you straight away to make you kick it and then so that they can pass the ball then for 10 minutes. I think Liverpool wait for like the weakest player to get the ball and then press, which is probably something I think Mayo do a bit of that identify who's the most uncomfortable on the ball in the defence. Let's guide him, let's let him up the line and then let's hit him, you know? So it's not just an all-out manic press. But no, I suppose the advantage of... obviously doing the press, you turn teams over when they're not in the defensive mode, they're not in that structured defense, and you will tend to get a lot of scores from it. A big thing that probably wasn't there in our day, we were often considered open at the back because of attacking half backs, but usually you had the ball and the ball went dead. But what left a lot of space at the back for us was when the wing forward started going and you're pressing them and you're on them, you know, to a certain level, and then everyone presses, and then that leaves a huge gap. So when you press as well, you have to be willing to leave space at the back, but it can leave you open. If someone breaks the press, they're out. But like, I suppose in our day we had, it's why I think the likes of Keith Higgins was such an excellent defender, was he was often in like the whole 50, maybe marking one guy, or the likes of Jerk Half and stuff. They were one-on-one out and out defenders. So,
Is that a thing on James's game? Like, I mean, you can have a lot of athletes and a lot of energy, but you must kind of have those four or five absolute masters of their individual craft to go with the energy and athleticism. Is that a key factor in how he sets it up?
Yeah, you have to be able to, I think, mark your own man, in fairness. Now, look, they're playing a little bit more structured game now. that they're not that open. But yeah, I think a lot of teams that are known as good defensive teams, if they were that good defensively, why do they have so many back to help them? Do you know what I mean? Now, everyone nearly does it now, even Dublin included. Like they're, it's the strength is in the numbers, but they'll commit more forward. But it's, yeah, like James needs for the, like, I think it's any intercounty team. If you can't defend 1-on-1, you're not going to be there for too long.
I think Croke Park's a great equaliser and that stuff as well. Like, because you can win provincial titles doing that. You know, you can win provincial titles kind of covering space or whatever the hell. But once you get to Croke Park, it gets so stretched and the stress and the pressure and everything, it's just a different world. All of a sudden, there will be moments of 1-on-1. There'll be moments where fellas have to deliver on their skill set and that. And it might only be one or two moments, but it's enough to win or lose an All-Ireland or All-Ireland semi-final or whatever, big game. So like that's the great equalizer always. Like you look at teams who've won All-Irelands, they've always had brilliant forwards. You know, I mean, even the teams who would be considered defensive in inverted commas, like you look at the Tyrone teams in the 90s, their forwards were outrageous. Even Donegal in 2012 had like Michael Murphy, you know, did excellent. McFadden did superb forwards. So like eventually the game does get stretched in Croke Park and all that sort of that kind of mass defense stuff kind of breaks up. And it's not that it doesn't disappear, but it's the nature of it. And there was kind of a sense that the game was starting to stretch in the last couple of years, but this summer maybe might feel slightly different so far. But I do think that's the provincial effect. I think once we get to Croke Park now, we'll have a different feel about the game. And particularly when you get to the top 12 as well. We don't want to go down the road of structures and all that. Like at least you're getting to the point now where you have evenly matched teams playing each other on a regular basis and you'll have a much better sense of where the game is at and a much better, you know, the skills will really come into it more now from here on.
Right, before we get into the controversy of Croke Park, does James Horan use Croke Park well, do you think, Donny? Are Mayo generally, you know, it's said a lot that Mayo are set up to play in Croke Park. Do you agree with that? And do you think that they'll be delighted that the game's in Croke Park this week?
Yeah, definitely. I was kind of preempting that might be one of the questions. And if you were asking me my opinion on Croke Park, I was going to switch with the players and James's opinion. But they'll be delighted to be in Croker. And if I was still playing, it'd be the same way. Croke Park, like I think it's why Mayo have done so well traditionally in Croke Park is like we're a very, very athletic team. It's why we've probably competed with Dublin, and it's why other teams, is it Fire, is it Tactics against Dublin, is like if you just, when you get to Croke Park, if you can't match the team athletically, you are in serious trouble. Like a simple thing would be space is one thing, it's a bigger pitch, but the surface is probably a bigger thing. So from a skill point of view, if I give a hand pass, you can see most of Dublin's hand passes actually don't go straight to the man. They just take a little bounce, like a basketball pass, and takes the sting out of it. You can take it, but the bounce is true. Like in another pitch, that could go dead. It could bobble. And a huge thing as well about Croke Park and the surface is the speed that you can get off it. So it's so firm. When you start running, and if you are quick and you have power and you have pace, we've seen it over the years on our GPS. On our GPS stats, that the highest speeds would often be hit in Croker. But I think he'd boil her on last week, actually. I think one of the little insight, but the Boiler's top speed there a year or two ago was we were playing the league final, and he was coming on for me with 20 minutes to go, and he was running on the field. And I think his top speed was running on, and I tapped him in or whatever. He was that pumped up for it. But usually it's chasing someone or it's attacking or breaking a line, yeah. But Croke Park, that's why it suits Mayo. Our fastest guys would run the fastest in Croke Park. It is probably why a couple of years ago, obviously Tommy Conroy came on the scene and you were seeing him, you were literally saying, I cannot wait to see this fella in Croke Park. I think the Tipperary game was his first one in, and he had a brilliant game that evening, but he's just a different animal in Croker as well. And he is a huge loss to Mayo this year as well. And I think people may be forgetting that as well. He's just, you can have sweepers and double teams and the whole lot, but he'll just run around the two players, and he's added power and power and strength to his pace as well. So it's just such a pity that he's missing this year.
Like lads, imagine though, like last weekend, was a good example. Like there was a goal chance last weekend. Imagine if Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy were inside the Killian. Mother of God. I mean, Mayo probably wouldn't have lost to Galway actually for a start, but they certainly would have made lighter work of last weekend. And like, it's just a misfortune. And look, it's loads of teams. All teams have to deal with injuries, but it's just over the last couple of years that sort of, there's been a touch of Lanigan's ball about it. Like, you know, Tommy steps out and Killian steps in again, and you haven't had the three of them together, you know, really, and on a sustained basis, just to see what it would be like. And you know, again, I suppose when push comes to shove later on the year, that could be crucial, you know.
Big thanks to Nigel Reap Office Supplies, print and sign, for supporting what we're doing here in the podcast. A friend of the podcast, as you know, comes on to talk football with us. But if you need any printing done, posters, signs, lotto booklets for your club, you name it, then give a shout to Nigel in Knockmore at 086-858-6572. Mick, just on the, like, there's a lot of fans who are really, really frustrated at the lack of logic at the venue, right? And I think it's important that I just drive this home as a point, because Donny has superbly emphasized why this venue is the best venue for the Mayo football team. And just in a one word answer, you agree with him. This is the best place for Mayo to be playing Kildare, yes?
Yeah, for the players. Yeah.
So yet they're, I looked on one poll in the Mayo News, 80% of their fans would prefer them to be in a venue that is less advantageous to their team by all metrics that we could possibly have, logic, stats, and even what Donny's given us there. Like, and yet you kind of understand where they're coming from too, because it's going to be a half empty stadium. It's a huge journey. People don't have a whole lot of money. They're the best fans in the country because they aren't far off them, in fairness. And you're dragging them into the middle of the city when Ireland are playing Scotland across the river and all the other things, all the hotels, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I think it tells you something. I'll probably tell you something about the confidence of the Mayo fans about the result, that they're happy enough. They're happy enough. They're happy enough to, you know, have it in Roscommon or wherever they were talking about. I'm the same. I was looking forward to, never thought I'd say it, lads, I was looking forward to a day out in Roscommon.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know
someone,
what I mean?
Someone clipped that there. The Roscommon football podcast. Let's clip it.
I've had plenty good days. I have a lot of stories about Roscommon and covering match in Roscommon, but today is not the day for those. On the face of it, and it's interesting because this year there's been a lot of talk about attendances, about venues, whether it's controversies over Páirc Uí Chaoimh or Corrigan Park up in Belfast, or various things, that Leinster hurling final attendance last weekend, which really wasn't that odd, actually. God, we can never bring a crowd, like, but like, it's like the only, like, in terms of trying to explain why it's in Croke Park, the only thing that makes sense to me is that this is something to do with premium tickets and people who bought season tickets for Croke Park, that they need to get a certain quota of games in there. Also, I suppose, look, from a Mayo perspective, for the players' perspective, I think it's really important to get back there, actually. I mean, quite apart from just, you know, suiting their game and so on and so forth. Like, they've lost their last couple of games there. I'm sure they want to just get up there and get a performance in, and hopefully a winning performance, and drive on. And for whoever wins up there, you know, it's okay, maybe less so for Kildare, but certainly for Mayo, it's just another run out before a quarter final at the same venue, and all that kind of stuff matters, I think, you know.
Just before I get to 2018 with Donny, I was asking you about Kildare. Like, was that not it was a great day for Kildare, but it's one great day in the midst of a lot of bad days either side of it. Whereas Mayo were in an All Ireland final in 17, they were back in a semi-final in 19. Like, did that actually work from Kildare's point of view, ultimately? Did the means justify the ends? Because to me, and I'm partisan on this, it seemed so kind of, you know, like lowering the bar of Kildare football to dragging them into a small ground, winning that day, but not doing anything from it then.
Well, like, Kildare are an interesting and unusual county in lots of ways when it comes to football. Like, I mean, in terms of just the direct, what impact did the Newbridge victory have? None really, like, and the players would tell you the same. You know, I mean, that year, you got to remember, they lost to Carlow that year as well.
I know. And then they didn't win in the qualifiers.
They lost. They lost all three games in the Super 8s, and they lost a shedload of Division 1 games as well. That year. So, I mean, it had been a very, very difficult year. And that one shining light was that kind of rear guard action, whatever you want to call it, in Newbridge, that they beat Mayo. Like, I mean, they're a team that sort of struggled really to get it together. Like, particularly in that year, where they were kind of coming, Cian O'Neill's time, then another year, like, and then Pat, and then Jack O'Connor came in, and there's been more churn in the team since. Glenn Ryan has come in. I mean, I met Kevin Feely a few weeks ago, the Kildare midfielder, and he was making the point, like, that even in the Jack O'Connor years, And obviously with the COVID upsetting things as well. But, you know, it really felt like rebuilding, team building, rebuilding. And they didn't really point their ambitions towards, you know, really getting close, really hurting Dublin and winning a Leinster title or doing anything like that or making progress in the championship. It was more about getting it together for around now, really, which is why, for me, the Leinster final performance for them was would have been very disappointing. I mean, they beat Dublin in the league for whatever that's worth, but it is worth something to Kildare, and the crowd invade the field. I know Kevin was telling me like that, we said compared now to Newbridge in 2018, like they've got their best crowds this year for league matches that they've ever played in front of because they're back in Division One, and there was a bit of energy about the whole thing. And I was at the Leinster final, and you go up and, lads, you know, four goals in the first 20 minutes and all poor goals, really, defensively, wide open, physically blown out of it. I mean, to be fair to them, it wouldn't have mattered who Dublin were playing on the day. Their accuracy and the way they played was so good, but still in all, you would have hoped that there would have been a better reaction from Kildare, at least after the first goal or two went in. But like Eugene McGee told me a great story, God rest him, when he was managing Offaly, and Offaly obviously stopped the five in a row back in 82, but they would have played Kerry many, many times through that period in league matches, and challenge games were a really big thing back then, right? And back that time, you could hand pass the ball into the net. So a lot of the time, you know, you'd have Kerry sweeping down the field, hand pass, bomber, hand pass, pass Martin Furlong into the goal. Some of these challenge matches ended up like 6-17 to 1-15 and all this kind of stuff. But McGee was a great man, even at that stage, for video analysis. So he would take him away and he would break down the goals to the point where he could pinpoint a defensive error somewhere in all the goals and say, lads, if we fix that, that goal doesn't happen. By the time he'd be finished, Offaly would only have lost the match by maybe 2 points rather than five goals and 3 points or 2 points, whatever. And I was kind of thinking about that when I was watching Kildare the last day and going, I don't think it's going to work the same way for these. This is a real blow to them at not competing with Dublin at a level they would have liked. So you're talking about a team that's trying to find itself, had real ambition for themselves this year in terms of getting close to Dublin and moving on. Now faced with, you know, a well-seasoned, you know, All-Ireland contending team, very comfortable in Croke Park. I think it could be a very tough day for Kildare if Mayo hit their marks.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
And yet, Donny, Kildare, being like a lot of counties, you probably experienced this, won't, while they'll respect Mayo, they won't fear them the same way they'll fear Dublin. And even after such a hammering, there'll still be a sense among a lot of Kildare players and people that, you know what, if things go right, we can win this.
Yeah, you could say that, but I think this fixture is nearly for Kildare, from a Kildare's perspective rather than Mayo. It's more about how Kildare react to how they played. Like, they conceded 5-5 in 26 minutes. Like, 20 points is their mark that wins. That's what we used to aim for. Wins you every game. After 26 minutes, that conceded. So I think another thing you have to take into account as well is, every year they would have faced Dublin in the Leinster final, there would have been no expectation of them really even competing, I would say. When, okay, Dublin in their heyday. But the fact that they'd beaten them earlier in the league this year, and it was brilliant to see it, to be honest. It's great to see the scenes, you know. But there was maybe a little bit of expectation, and then it's sometimes that's the worst way to lose, when you have expectation. You choose, we have a chance, and next thing, the rug is pulled from under you. So it'll be how Kildare reacts. You know, they might, how they react to that, really, for this Mayo game, and they need to back to basics. I think defensively, I was looking at something there earlier as well, where I think Kildare have conceded, is it 9.52 in the last three games, which is an average of like 3.17. Like, that's an average of 26 points a game. Like, they, if I was starting somewhere, they need to tighten up at the back. You know, if they can hold Mayo to 14, 15 points or something, and they, like, because they have actually scored quite a lot in a couple of games. I think they kicked 18 points below Carrick and Shannon.
They did. And they had Mayo in a bit of trouble defensively. McCormick was playing puck, and Mayo were conceding a lot of scores, especially in that first half.
Yeah, so, like, I know that's fairly simple, but tighten the defence, whole May after that, and then if they can put up a score themselves, they have a chance. Like, but Mayo and Croke Park again, athletically, I think are different animals. Like, but
Ben McCormack actually did all right as well against Dublin. You know, he did okay. He got 4 points from playing a mark. Like, so too bad. Jimmy Hyland did okay. Like, their kick out though got destroyed, really destroyed. And you know, and it's a pity because I mean, you know, Kevin Feely is an important player for them, and if you can get him motoring, you know, he could certainly hold his own against anybody. You know, I would say even, you know, the likes of Matty Rowan and the lads.
I mark Kevin. He's a fine player. Like, I remember the first time now he kind of came on the scene, came back from soccer and stuff. But he's 6'1" or something. But he's, I don't know what height he is. He's a big man now, deceptively, and he's got both feet and stuff. So.
But they just don't know. Like, it's just how it's, as you say, well, Donnie. It's how they react.
Mick, you could see them. Like, you know, Mayo are the type of team that can relaunch teams at times as well. When Mayo are inspiring, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
very obliging that way. All right, fairness. Mick,
there's times when these teams come into us in all sorts of doldrums, and then we kind of give them all this belief. Now that said, how often do they actually win against Mayo? Not that often.
That's the thing. And you know, Donnie mentioned earlier on that Derry qualifier leapt to mind when I was watching Mayo Monaghan the other weekend, because it was the same crack. Like, it was Mayo going, yeah, geez, you know, yeah, it's all there, but Christ above, they're going to make this hard for themselves, aren't they? And they do. They can. And
but
they will.
Here's a question, Donnie. Why is that the case? Do you feel that too now that you've retired? Why do Mayo teams not just cruise to victory more often?
In fairness, Rob, you're mentioning it there, the cost of going to games and stuff. I just haven't seen around footballers or entertainers. No point. We have to make it exciting. But in fairness, ourselves, sure, we'd be pulling your hairs up going, mud. Like, why could we not just, as a player, the one time you can maybe enjoy a game in the game is when you get to that point that you're like, 10 up or 15, you nearly know that the game is won. I'm not saying even 5 or 6, because you wouldn't know. But it's, Mayo will be looking at that. I think 14 was the one year actually that we did get that right. I think people will always say, oh, Mayo always lose leads and they can never hang on to them. If you actually look at 14 that time, I think we blew every team out of the water. Played Tyrone in that semi. Was it Tyrone?
No, that was, oh, 14.
No, it was Kerry. Sorry, yeah, 13. I'm wrong in the ears. It was 13.
Gotcha.
I think we blew every team in 13 out of the water. And in that final, actually, had Dublin, we should have been like 7 or 8 points up, as we know, and the Dublin got scored. We still went in 4, but should have been about 8 or 9.
Yeah, we scored 7 of the first 9 scores in that game.
That's
we scored
1-1.
Right.
One.
We scored 7 points. Like, yeah.
Look what you started.
Oh, let's not go back over. Yeah.
But what you caught. But just, like. Go sorry, go on. No. Sorry. I was just going to say, but I mean, that Monaghan game was a. You know, that's the concern if you're playing Kildare, for example. Like, so they play terrifically well for 20-odd minutes. Owen McLaughlin has a chance just after halftime to completely finish the game and balloons it at the keeper rather than, again, I go back to that thing about, oh, just a nice dinky corner forward, just dropping it onto the foot and rolling it past the keeper or whatever, and the game's over. And then suddenly the game just gets away from them. Like their accuracy first half was excellent. I mean, it was exceptionally good, Mayo. And then second half.
I think it was 100% at once, like for a good while. Yeah,
it was brilliant.
80% by the half time, yeah.
It dropped below 50 then in the second half. Like,
yeah,
and suddenly, like, the match ends somehow. And I appreciate, I mean, we haven't really chatted much about the black cards and the whatever. The black card was a black card against Conor McManus. Brilliant spike by the referee.
Yeah.
The foot block that Monaghan were claiming was not a foot block. There was too much space between the foot and the ball. The Lee Keegan one we mentioned already earlier on, I thought the Lee Keegan one was touch and go. I think it was would it have been given out the field is the question I always ask in those ones. Possibly not. So it was one of those ones could have been given. But even if it had been given, lads, Mayo was still won the game. Like, they were just that bit better. But still in all, the match ends with people shrieking in the stands and the ball being driven high up into the sky and a bit of pandemonium and all the rest of it. And that's the concern you have, that they could go very well, but they just have to maintain a good cruising altitude. You don't have to be brilliant all day, but just do enough, like, you know.
But there's two elements, because Mayo had two attempts to play the ball out of defence in those closing stages, and the ball came over to Killian O'Connor twice and he had no support. No one was coming to him. So that was the first point. Second point, Donny, I put to you what Billy Joe said today, that, you know, sometimes in those moments, go long and get yourself set again. Do you agree with that?
On the kick out?
Yeah, if you're leading by 3 with 2 minutes to go, the temptation is to go for the short ball and try and hold the ball for 3 minutes. But sometimes it could be you just go long and win that kick out.
I'd be a big advent of the long kick out. And it's it's coming back in a little bit, and some teams are using it obviously as a weapon, but it's, in fairness, they say long kickouts are 50-50. We would always say we want to win two out of three, which is 66%. That was always our metric on it. But the ones you win, because the ball is in the air, you get teams into a false sense of confidence. Even though it's our kickout and the ball's in the air, they feel we've every bit of the chance of winning. This is you. And it sucks teams in. And it's that moment from when the ball comes down to where people realize where they are. Therein lies the opportunity. It's a great way to launch an attack, you know, long kickouts. Even, I think we had a thing in, I don't want to keep coming back, but it's 17, was it, where we actually were bringing our half forward line back into the half back line, creating like a four across the middle and running onto the ball. You know, long kickouts, yeah, they're very effective. But it's, I suppose the keeper really is the ultimate one that makes the call. You might have a set call, but it's the keeper nearly has to play what he sees. I actually thought Robbie had the Rory Burner the next game, in fairness, in the first one. But I thought some of Robbie's kickouts the last day were exceptional. Another thing I did think that was interesting, and it feeds into the kind of keeper's things, is Mayo seemed to be giving Began the corner back one. And blocking Began's favourite one is the one over the top, the three quarter ones. He loves coming out like he's top class keeper. But I think this is all modern keepers know. They want to be involved in the game. They want to get the three quarters. And like when you don't give him that, you effectively say, look, you're all right there. You don't have anything to do for today. Just kick it out. And
A point on that, Darren McHale's point, if people watch it back, because this is Edwin was sitting beside me who pointed this out, it was his wisdom, but like McHale's point touches off the crossbar and goes over, and the reason why Began didn't catch that, and he could have caught that, is because he was needlessly 45 metres up the field, just standing there, whereas if he had been in position on that Mayo attack quicker, like he's saving a point. So they're the real minute details as well that can come into this whole concept of bringing the keeper out. And once it's ineffective, there's the problem. Here's a question, because we're getting towards the end of this. How do you think James Horn's going to use Croke Park differently maybe than he used McHale Park? How is he going to make use of it against Kildare for you, Donny, this week?
I think James is just focusing on more accuracy. Like James is big on skills and hitting the ball to where you want at the right time with the right foot. They'll really want to put a pace in the game and play with a tempo where they can. Like, so I'm going back, if they got any chance to counterattack to Kildare, to keep the ball and play, to move at sideline balls, freeze, they want to bring a real pace to the game, because it's enabled back their athleticism. But like, they'll be setting up something similar, like there'll be no major change in the way they play.
Mick, what do you reckon for this weekend? What are you expecting in terms of outcome and why, I guess?
I fancy a Mayo win. Like Donny, I don't think, I mean, you know, we were chatting earlier just about how Mayo have changed the game. A lot of what was mentioned was very, you know, technical stuff, really. I mean, the general thrust of how James Horan likes to play the game, to my eyes anyway, has not changed. And the general approach when push comes to shove is get after teams and you know they'll give Kildare a chance because of the way they play, you know. But if they can put, I would like to see a bit more of that structure that we talked about earlier. I'd like to see a bit of that structure now in Croke Park from Mayo, because that will be important in the next few games if they get past this one, which I do expect they will. I'd be curious to see what the injury list is like. I don't know where Ryan O'Donoghue is at and these guys, but like it will be. Coming in now to the business end of things, you want to, obviously, it goes without saying, you want everybody ready, and you have especially guys like that who can make a difference for you, you know. But I think they'll get over whatever they had last Saturday will be good enough to get over this coming weekend. Again, it'll just be, again, trying to get that bit of consistency. Sometimes you find that consistency of performance coming through the qualifiers after one defeat. It takes a couple of games. And for Mayo, I think it's probably going to be whoever they get in the last eight could well be the sort of the game that clicks for them. Do you know what I mean? These two matches, Monaghan and Kildare, are very winnable and should be winnable, really, if they have any designs on winning any more than this. It could be the next match. It's where it either all comes together for them or maybe doesn't quite work out, you know?
Donny, call the weekend. What do you reckon?
In fairness, I'm a supporter now, but as a player, I'd always be pumping up Kildare, so I'm like, I'm not sure what to say here. But
you're sound.
Yeah, all right, no. I want to help the lads out. But, yeah, look, Mayo, I'd be expecting Mayo to win. But like, I've always said this, like, Mayo need to perform to win. They're off it. And they give, like we just said, we're off it. We give teams a chance. It could be a classic, an entertaining game. But no, if Mayo play like they can, they should win.
Highly expensive weekend for Mayo fans, and lot and very little entertainment is what we're looking for. We really don't care about the fans at all. We won the boring game and then spend huge money to go across the country just to help Mayo to win. These things can't align right now. We'll talk a little bit more in the clubhouse section of the podcast for our Patreon listeners about the expenses and the difficulty for fans and stuff. We'll also chat a little bit about what Donny's up to in his post-career. But that's for then. For you, our listeners, on our weekly podcast, Jim McGuinness was on our post-game show for an interview. So you get this. You get a chance to listen to this. A little sample of what you get on patreon.com/Mayo podcast. In the meantime, we'll speak to you guys in the week. Thanks, Mick.
No problem, man.
Donny, great to have you on. Thanks a million.
Cheers, Rob. Thanks.
All right, folks, enjoy this and we'll talk to you in a week. Jim McGuinness on the Mayo Football Podcast. Mike Finnerty would be absolutely angry with me if I let you go past us here. And like, why didn't you get Jim?
I've never seen Mike Finnerty angry, so that's interesting.
Hey, I tell you what, James Horan, he's been grumpy in the last few weeks. He's going to be feeling a lot happier this evening.
Well, listen, maybe they normally play well when he's grumpy. You know, it's good for a manager to be grumpy. It means he's focused. But no, I thought Mayo done well today. Like, they kept them at arm's length the whole way through the game, really, in many respects. First half was very good. I felt they mixed the game up really well. Obviously, the running power from the full-back line, the half-back line in the middle of the park is there, and that's obvious. But what they didn't well in the first half for me was they mixed it up. You know, they played a couple of balls in the diagonal. They clipped a ball or a couple of balls into the full forward line. They fisted a couple in, and that was sort of... the capacity to change up their game was what made the difference in the first half for me. It wasn't as evident in the second half, and I think a big part of that was because in the first half, every time you looked up, there was always a full forward inside the square, and it gave you a point of attack. That wasn't there in the second half for me. The full forwards roamed a lot more, and they were sort of, you know, being drawn out the field and going a wee bit earlier than they were in the first half. And it meant then that a lot of the time, whenever the players out the field across 45 managed to lift their head and see that the pass was on, there was nobody inside close to goal to head it to. And I think if they can get back to what they did in the first half, that's a really good blueprint for the rest of the championship for Mayo, because Dublin proved that last weekend, the way they're, you know, hugging the line in the small parallelogram with the three inside men, and given that sort of, even if it's only a dink ball, it's changing the point of the attack from a defensive point of view. Whereas you had the Ulster final last week and it was the same puzzle for the whole game. And I think, you know, so Mayo were asking a couple of different questions in the first half, and I think that's important.
Do you think Mayo changed it by design, or is that concentration from players? Is that the way the game evolved?
I don't honestly know. You need an awful lot of discipline to stay close to goal. Like, you know, it's so easy to just take a step, then you're inside the D, then you're on the 45, but, you know, anticipating it's coming, and it takes a lot of discipline just to say, no, I'm going to stand, I'm going to wait, and then when that moment comes, I'm going to explode into that 20 metres of space. And if you don't do that, you end up in the 20 metres of space, and that was the difference for me. That was the only difference, really. Like, and then obviously it impacted. It went 21 minutes without a score, so that impacted in terms of keeping the scoreboard ticking over. And, you know, they had to depend on the bigger guys to step up again. Lee Keegan in particular, Paddy Durkin, I thought, had a massive game coming from deep. Oisin Mullen looked back to himself, so a lot of positives. McLaughlin as well, thought very good. So coming from deep, it's not going to be an issue for them, and I think that's why that point that I'm making is so important for the next day.
You're a man who'd understand his position, you'd understand what he's trying to do. Matty Horan, you know, he's been an all-star, but he's had some bad moments as well in the last 12 months, if you like. Well, bad moments is stretching it, but just games where he hasn't really excelled. What was he like today? Can he be the driving force Mayo need?
Listen, when you're playing midfield, and I played there myself for long enough, when you're playing midfield, like, you know what I mean, you're going to have those ups and downs. And I think if you don't have them, you're not playing, to be honest with you, you know, because, you know, you might get on the ball 20 times, you get turned over twice, and that's what people talk about, you know what I mean? So, and that is the reality of it. But no, listen, I think from number one up to number nine, Mayo can compete with anybody, and I think they've got to work really hard now in terms of like, James Horan himself would have been incredibly driven by the long ball game, you know, when we were taking Mayo on at the beginning of the last decade, and so it's nothing strange to him. I think it's just the athletic profile of the player that he has found himself working with over the last couple of years means that, you know, it makes sense to run the ball because there's so many powerful athletes coming from deeper positions. But I think if they can keep finding that mix that they had in the first half, it just asks a whole different series of questions that those defences don't necessarily think about when they're setting the team up during the week.
They were a real pain in the neck for all the other managers in the back of their mind. The ones
who you're going to say for their own supporters. Well, I'll be thinking now we're heading for the All Ireland final again.
Here we go, and we won't have Tommy Conroy. How are we going to do it? But like in that bigger picture, you know, I'm just looking at the teams in the draw now. Donegal being one of them. No one wants Mayo, I guess. Is that fair?
Oh, that is very fair. Yeah, that's very, very fair. And you know, being honest with you, looking at that there today, and if they can improve again, and them few things we were speaking about, like it'll be a very good team to beat them.
Enough, Jim McGuinness, always a pleasure.
You too. Thanks.